Welcome to episode number 458 of the Hunt Back Country podcast. This is the part two, the second episode, recapping our 2024 death hike. In this episode, you'll hear from four different death hike participants, a mix of guys who are brand new to the death hike, guys who are newer to the death hike, and some death hike veterans. So we'll hear from Brigham, who works for the company Outdoor Vitals. They make some great clothing and gear. We're going to hear from our friend Jack Lander, Anthony Oberti, who's a death hike veteran, and Gabriel, who owns and runs Ivory Holsters. I'll leave links in the description to learn more from these guys if you want to get in contact with them or maybe follow them on Instagram, something like that. But right now, let's go ahead and dive into part one and speak with Brigham. Brigham, let's start here. We've talked with different guys, asking them about their prior death hike experiences. This was your first hike, but I guess you've heard of the death hike. We've talked about the death hike, things like that. But just what was your mindset going into this one, being the first one? Like, what were, I don't know, expectations versus reality? And I don't mean just on the hike itself, but maybe like the dynamics of the group and the experience from a broader perspective.
Yeah. I mean, you are right. I definitely was aware of the death hike. You know, I've listened to your guys' podcast for years, probably since its inception. I mean, I've had your packs since the K2, every generation. So I'm well aware of it. I've enjoyed the podcast definitely thought it was a cool thing you guys did. I understood and kind of had respect for the closed nature of it, just from the, you know, the group size perspective and trying to manage that. So I guess, you know, some of my expectations and thoughts going into it were, I was first like felt really like just appreciative and grateful for, you know, the invite and the association and being able to come and kind of, had some feelings of not, you know, not wanting to get in the way or be a problem or, I don't know, just kind of, I guess, make you guys wish that you hadn't invited me. So, there was definitely some of that. The dynamic, I'm a pretty, like, kind of solo guy. Most of the hunts that I do are solo. Most of my backpacking trips are by myself. I don't get into big groups of guys very often, which is, you know, in some of my previous experience, like in the military, I was obviously in groups all the time, very close knit group of guys, but I haven't kind of been exposed to that for years, aside from the, you know, things I do like for my professional side of life. But I did still kind of have an expectation just from listening to so many of your podcasts about it and just think it was really cool. I got a feel that I kind of got the impression that you guys had a close-knit group of guys that you know, you consistently kind of, you have the same guys in the group do it. So I was kind of looking forward to kind of being around a group of guys that was the way that I thought they would be, which, you know, turned out to be the case. And then the physical side, you know, you guys have done some pretty brutal hikes. You know, I was talking to Steve about one of the areas that you guys have done a hike, and I've been backpacking in that area for years. You know, and like the one you guys did up by Mount Idaho and Bora, you know, I drive past that every year when I go on these trips. So, I know you guys definitely get after it and look for a pretty good physical challenge. So that's kind of what I was expecting. I knew like this year was a bit different, and it was a place that I'd been several times in the Grand Canyon. And so I did. My expectation was that it would be pretty tough with the kind of the plan that you guys had laid out. So I guess that's kind of my answer to that.
It's interesting to think through the group dynamics because, on one hand, the individuals that participate, I think, are unique and are special. But at the same time, if you were to take those group of guys and put them together, but without the challenge and without the experience and without the adventure, like you wouldn't have the same like bond or group dynamic. And I say that to encourage people who may be listening to this, and it's like, well, they want an experience like that with other guys, but they can't, quote unquote, find the right guys or whatever. And it's like, well, part of it is just doing it. And then, like, that connection, the experience comes. Like, part of what makes a group so special is what you said, Brigham. It's like the fact that a lot of these guys have done so many of these or, have had experiences together. Like, there's guys I see on the death hike that I don't talk to too much throughout the year. Some I do, some I don't, et cetera. But like every time we come back together for a death hike, like there's just a unique connection there because of what we have done together. And so I would just say that to listeners to encourage, like, a death necessarily doesn't start that way. It becomes that way when you do it. So again, as we say all the time, just get out there and do it.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and like kind of to your point, I've talked and interacted with you two several times, face to face, and many more times, over phone and email and text. But like that dynamic you just described was like almost instantly recognizable as soon as I got there. Like a total newcomer, didn't know anybody, and neither of you guys were there when I arrived. But you could just tell, those that dynamic was like very, very thick, I guess. You could tell that what you described is very, very true.
Cool. So not your first death hike, but you said you've been in the Grand Canyon multiple times. We could, I'm sure, talk for hours about previous experiences, but I guess just kind of briefly, like, how did your previous experiences hiking slash running in the Grand Canyon influence, I don't even want to say your preparation, but like just how you were looking at this specific adventure in the Grand Canyon?
Well, I've done several like kind of quicker day trips that were just like in the 18-mile range. You go from like the South Kaibab Trail to down to the river and then out the Bright Angel Trail. I'm familiar just with like the trail conditions and the elevation loss and gain in general. I have done for work, we did a kind of a running slash hiking trip where we did the rim to rim to rim, but we stayed overnight after doing, the two rims and then coming back down to the bottom. And then we hiked out the next day. And that trip, I learned a lot of lessons from that trip in terms of like game planning and managing like nutrition, like food intake and hydration and taking electrolytes and then just body management, because in that trip, like way overdid it, like aggressively running downhill. And then, we may talk about it later, but like the trail conditions are they're terrible for that, and they'll wreck the body if you don't do that like every day of your life. So I don't know what the deal was. So I'll just say blew out my knee. My knee was destroyed after like 10 miles, and so it just left me limping along at a snail's pace for like 20 something miles that day. And so that kind of left a good like learning lesson, mental scar in my brain of like, planning ahead for the next time I would do it. And then I will say that you did inform me that I cheated. One of my training hikes prior to this was 4 weeks ago, or 4 weeks prior to the death hike. I went and down after work one day on a Friday, drove down and did the rim to rim to rim, just to kind of see how I managed just a single round of that, with the plan being to do two of them. And so, learned a lot from that one too, in terms of like how I would want to game plan the death hike. And yeah, so you know, because I'd say it really influenced the death hike in terms of how I paced myself, managed my food intake and water, and just being careful with like injury or avoiding injury. So yeah.
I didn't know you had done that 4 weeks prior. How'd that go?
So it's really interesting, because during the death hike, I was comparing myself mile per mile, like how I felt,
Mm-hmm.
and like how everything felt. And like I felt so much better this time around than I did that time around. And I kind of like, yeah, I kind of narrowed it down to a couple takeaways where, yeah, 4 weeks ago, I went on having not slept at all prior to beginning, and then maybe not managing my calorie intake well. And so it was crazy because, you know, this time I felt like I had a ton of energy, you know, at the end. You know, it was all done, like whatever time it was that I finished, I felt very, very solid energy wise. The only thing that was worse this time around was my feet, because I kind of made a last minute shoe change, and that really was a bad choice. But yeah, I felt a lot better this time, and I do attribute a lot of that to kind of some of the lessons learned from that training hike, and then applying that to the death hike, and I'd say it worked out pretty well.
What were the conditions notably different? Like in a meaning not just observationally, but like to the extent that you felt it influenced your performance or anything like that on either of those hikes being roughly 4 weeks apart?
You know, I think the earlier hike, the conditions were better. I mean, the weather was better. It was a little bit warmer. Definitely didn't get hit with the whatever 30 or 40 mile per hour winds with the snow. So I think the conditions were easier the last time. But I physically felt better this time. And then I also like judge myself on something like this 2 days after it's over, because that's usually when I'm the most sore from something. Like if I do like a pretty brutal hunt with a solid pack out, then it's usually 2 days later that I'm the most sore. And I have, like, again, aside from my feet, like basically no soreness, which I'm pretty happy about, because that kind of shows that some of the things I did worked out pretty well.
What'd you do between those two, having roughly 4 weeks between the efforts? Did you, because, like, you know, most guys didn't have this opportunity, so they're like, they're trying to peak, or the death hike we just did, the rim to rim to rims, like the big effort, the long effort, you know, so they're leading up to that, and then maybe quote-unquote like tapering or scaling back training for, you know, 5 to 10, 12 days beforehand. But you had this unique of like, well, I'm doing the rim to rim to rim, and I'm doing it again 4 weeks later. Like, how much or how little did you kind of do in between, or was it not super strategic?
I definitely had a plan. It didn't go totally as planned. I had a unexpected funeral that I had to travel for, so that kind of threw off my plan by, you know, a couple training events. But I didn't do anything more significant than that. So I did, what I did is I stopped running. So I decided to not run in that 4 week period. And then, but I just kept doing, I don't know how many, I did a few hikes, between like the 10 and 18 mile distance range. So I probably did 4 or 5 of those in those 4 weeks. I did a couple back to backs with like 3,000 feet of elevation. But then I cut it off 1 week prior. So for that last week, I didn't do anything.
So not doing day two, you know, different people had different experiences. I think that influence their decision. Like some of the super fit, gung-ho guys, I thought would have, for sure would have done day two. You know, they went out too hard on day one. They ran too much, kind of like you talked about with your previous experience, Brigham, of like pounding that downhill and then that creating issues. So some guys kind of blew themselves up. Some guys were feeling decent, but were, you know, weather and other factors influenced it. Other guys flat out got completely crushed by day one. There was no way they were going to do day two.
Yeah.
There's variables of like, you know, the sleep, like being up crazy late and not feeling like you get any rest between day one and day two, or feeling too time crunched for day two with the timeline. So, you know, there's all these different variables of people not doing day two. And for some, it was a mix of all the above, or maybe others. I'm curious, like for you, because I wasn't there, right? Like you and I didn't have a conversation about day two. I don't know when you came in, what you heard, you know, what you're hearing
right.
from other guys, et cetera. But I guess for you, I mean, essentially no one ended up doing it, which, you know, we could all just say we copped out, but again, everybody has their reasons. But I guess I don't know, like you and I haven't talked about your experience of that, of not doing day two, like whether that was your personal decision or just influenced by the whole group dynamic of no one's freaking doing this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting having, I was trying to explain to somebody, I was telling somebody just yesterday about it, and what you just described about, like, we hadn't talked about it, and like, I didn't talk to anybody about it, and it was interesting. And I'll just say, like, to say it shortly or quickly, is that I would say it was the group, whatever the group was doing was what I was doing. And it was hard to determine, like, when I got into camp, because it was, I rolled in about 10:45, I think. Like 10:45, maybe 11. And, you know, everybody was basically asleep or in their tents. And, you know, with the expectation of doing it again, I didn't want to, like, go around knocking on people's tents and saying, "Hey, are you going again?" I wanted to let people sleep. And I figured I would set my alarm. So I wanted to get 3.5 hours of sleep. So I set my alarm for 3:30, knowing that it would take me a while to eat dinner, just kind of get stuff ready for the next round. And so I set my alarm for 3:30. My plan was to just wake up, get out of the tent, and see what was going on. And then if nothing was going on, wake up an hour later and do the same thing. But it was, let's see, I'm trying to think if I even talked to anybody. I talked to Taysen, and he didn't plan on doing the second round anyway, but he kind of had woken up, and he's like, "I don't know that anybody here yet is planning on going out tomorrow." But like you said, I didn't see you or Steve. But I knew you had already been back, so I just assumed you were off doing something else, you know, and I would learn what that was later. But, I'd say I was just kind of like, I got up, that first time I kind of like got up, and it was like right after Steve had kind of, tried to figure out what was going on with that last group. So I kind of like, sort of heard what was going on, which was kind of worrisome. But then I went back to sleep, and then got up again, and, you know, nobody was up at all. And so set my alarm again for 5:30, and I was like, man, 5:30, that's really pushing it. Like, so if nobody's up, I guess I'll just go back to sleep, but there's no way I'm gonna do it after that, you know, and just in terms of time. But yeah, in the end, I'd say it was just like, I was there to just kind of be with the group and participate. And I don't want this at all to sound like I'm blaming the group. I'm not complaining that I only did it once, you know, so, it was fine. And I enjoyed kind of that morning, the next morning, just hanging out in camp and talking it up. So.
So you didn't like, you mentioned set an alarm for 3:30, which is like essentially when we were trying to get to sleep. You didn't hear that because like there was guys talking in camp and we're, picking people up, from the trail kind of at that time. But that wasn't like, I guess you weren't conscious for that, right? Or didn't hear that
Well,
conversation.
no, I see, that's what I thought I heard bits and pieces of,
Oh, okay.
and I might be getting the times wrong because I remember like laying in my tent, having been asleep, but then hearing like just bits and pieces, because I don't know, you tell me maybe, Steve, because it sounded like I thought I heard like some walking around. I could hear Steve, and I could hear him talking about those other guys and something about the van or being at the trailhead anyway. And so I was kind of like trying to piece it together in my mind that there was a group that hadn't gotten there yet. So I did get bits and pieces of that, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, it would have been like what you said earlier about 2 days after like gauging soreness and things like that. I mean, we were just talking about this before we started recording, but think, doing day two would have been, yeah, I'm super freaking curious about it. It's
Oh,
it
I know
gnaws
we
at
could have
me.
all done it.
I
Like,
know, that's the thing, is like, yeah,
I'm
it's
so
like
pissed.
possible, but I wonder what like recovery and any, I don't say long term meaning permanent, but like I know the way I recovered from this, but also the way I was feeling, it wouldn't have doubled from doing two, it would have like quadrupled, right? Like I don't, it would have
Oh, at
taken like
least
2 weeks,
too.
three
Yeah.
weeks. I mean, it would have been like I was just, I went and rode 10 miles of mountain biking last night with my son and had a blast, but it's like I don't think I would have been able to do that for potentially
Yeah.
like weeks, you know?
That's the point of the hike though, right? Like, I mean, I
Yeah.
guess if you've trained so well that you could have done all 100 miles of mountain biking in 2 days, then kudos to you, because you busted
Right.
your ass leading up to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I think I heard you say the next morning, Mark, like that to do it again would have been like just a brutal suffer fest, but totally doable. I think that's sounds accurate to me. I probably agree with that.
The fact that you got like an opportunity to do it twice, even though it was a few weeks apart, like I'm jealous of that because I would be very curious to go back and 2, 3, 4 weeks and repeat it and see if I could improve time or how it would feel or what I learned or do more. Like that is, and what you said earlier about like even doing shorter hikes at the canyon, like descend South Kaibab and come up Bright Angel, like. The guys who live within, a handful of hours and can go do that, man, I'm jealous. It's such a cool, yes, like it's the Grand Canyon, it's scenic, it's unique, et cetera, but what a freaking awesome like training pro like playground and also just a baseline to have, like to go do that multiple times a year and kind of
Yeah.
like optimize and improve. Like that is so cool.
Well, and yeah, it is. I'm very, happy and fortunate to live where I do. It's about a 5 hour drive, and like I felt like the day I did it, I'm like, this is doable. I'll just drive down there and start whenever I get there. And but like it is, from that training standpoint, it is pretty cool because it is such a defined route. You know what I mean? It's not like, so you can kind of like how I was describing, like mile for mile, I could compare my previous trip. You know what I mean? And so it's just like those things kind of catalog away in the brain, like, hey, I remember when I passed this sign, I was feeling like this, or oh, this stretch of switchbacks here is terrible and, I hate them, but I feel better or worse than the last time. And so it is a pretty good training tool, or a way to take advantage of it as a training tool.
I know you're pretty analytical, intentional with, you've mentioned gear, nutrition, et cetera, but whether it's takeaways, stuff that just worked well, stuff that didn't, like I would just love to kind of hear what's top of mind from you on any of the above, whether again it's gear, nutrition, et cetera.
Yeah, nutrition wise, I thought what I did was pretty good. I had a good broad range of what I would call pretty normal foods like nuts, cashews, and almonds that are kind of like solid foods. I had a mix of a couple different gummies. I had like cinnamon bears and bright crawlers, and then I had some powdered calorie drink mix. So it was a Scratch Lab Super Fuel, so it was like a 400 calorie serving. So that's just drinkable calories basically. And then I had, things like Fritos, another kind of very normal food. And then I like to make these kind of tortilla salami and cheese things with a couple mustard packets that I really like the vinegary saltiness of the mustard on like a long on a long haul. Because it's all just about for me just being able to consume it. So all that worked pretty well. And then I feel like for me, I have to really dial in the efficiency of consuming everything. So having stuff that I can just easily access without having to take the pack off, that's a big deal. Same thing with hydration. And I think that's definitely an area where I would have liked to have been more efficient. I felt like it was pretty efficient, but it was funny. I did most of that hike in terms of mileage, like somehow by myself. And it was so frustrating because it was like a couple trips to the bathroom. And then I like my shoes, I got blisters. So I had to stop three times to tape or try to tape my heels. And it's just like, man, the timing was just so terrible that, my pacing, I wasn't trying to hurry. I was just trying to keep a steady pace, but I just ended up for miles just like, well, I guess I'm here, get here alone again, and this is fine. So.
It was definitely a very unique how the hike flowed, and that just nobody stopped. And I had that coming from Manzanita down to Phantom on the way back. I over hydrated, but I had to pee like every mile. And I was like
Oh
with a
yeah,
group of
that's
six
another
guys, and
thing.
then I think I had to pee three times in that 9 mile stretch. So yeah, it was like stop to pee, and it's just, I mean, as quick as I could stop pee, the group would be another 300-400 yards in front of me. I mean, it was
Yeah.
you just couldn't catch up. I didn't catch them until back at Phantom when everyone stopped to fill up with water.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it was good though. I mean, trying to think of other takeaways. Yeah, I mean, a big takeaway for me was, the change in footwear. I mean, I did the last minute change because I had issues with the shoes I decided to not take on my previous two hikes. I did a couple back to backs and they were giving me an issue on the ball of my ankle. Anyway, but I that's definitely it's partially in my control and a little bit out of my control. So, since I could control some of it, that was definitely a takeaway, is that did the way that I handled that did not work well for my feet. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited, Brigham, to get you on a future death hike, and then we don't know yet what that will be, but I feel like we all need a little bit of redemption, and it was fun having you as part of the group. Excited to have you again in the future, and go do something challenging and fun, and hopefully get to actually spend some more miles together.
Yeah, me as well. Again, I really appreciated the invite, and it was a great dynamic. It was yeah, readily apparent, some of that, call it brotherhood of the group, from all the hardship and stuff. And so yeah, I had a great time, appreciated being there. And I do, yeah, definitely look forward to doing it again with you guys. So
Well, Jack, let's start here. What is your history or previous experiences with death hikes? What number was this for you?
this was number two. My first one was last year when we did Bora. Well, when everybody but me did Bora.
Yeah. That's not a true statement. There's a lot of people who didn't do Bora.
Yeah. No, last year's, it was a cool hike. This year's was also a cool hike, just very different. I think it had similar challenges. But overall, like just being on a groomed trail, although the trail wasn't quite as nice as I anticipated it being. So it was, yeah, it was a different experience for sure.
What held you back last year? Was it the heights, the exposure?
Yeah, overall it was the exposure.
Yeah.
So like, I mean the off trail stuff. Well, once I looked at Bora and at Chicken Out Ridge, it was like, oh, this is pretty intimidating. And then watching Anthony try and skirt across the snowpack, and he was like holding on for dear life. I was like, yeah, that's not exciting for me. I don't enjoy it. So I just hung out, and then looking across at Idaho, I was like, okay, if I couldn't do Bora, there's no way I'm going to do Idaho. And so, yeah, that's why me and Jeff looped around and just stayed on trail a little bit.
That was a, just going back to that, I think that was really impressive because it had been very easy to pull the plug and then not come back and attack it. You guys just, you pulled the plug on that exact route, but then immediately figured out another route and went and did it. That's not easy to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think having Jeff there, it was like, it was pretty easy for us to talk each other into like continuing on. Cause it's like, well, dude, we didn't come all the way over here just to do an 8 mile hike and call it quits. So yeah, it was like, well, we still need the experience. And, so it was fun. I'm glad I had a partner. Doing it by myself would have sucked, but yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. I think we talked about that with you after last year's death hike, right? Weren't you on a recap of that one?
Not last year's. I think I talked about it with Kyle on his podcast. Might be a little bit of it where you heard it, maybe, but
I think we had Jeff on the podcast.
Right. Yeah. That's why that story sounded familiar in terms of telling that a little bit. That's must have been what it was. Jack, your story is unique. I think it would be helpful for listeners to hear a little bit about your background and really what led you to, yes, be able to do death hikes, but really everything else you've done. And I know you've mentioned Kyle's podcast. That'd be a great one to go to because I know you went into a larger story there of what your journey has looked like. But can you give listeners like a picture of, I don't want to say who you were and who you are, but just the massive life changes you've made?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's funny. I was looking at a picture last night and just that popped up on like a screensaver on our TV. And I made some joke about being, well, I just made it. I was like, babe, look at that. And then she looks up and it's a picture of me giving her a kiss on the cheek. And she's like, yeah, look how fat you were. But yeah, I guess in a nutshell, yeah, Kyle's podcast, I go into detail a lot more. But essentially out of college, after I was done doing sports, I just kind of had it in my head like, oh, I guess I'll just be done working out or weightlifting. And so I'd have small seasons where I'd be trying to get in shape, but overall I put on 100 pounds in a couple years. And then I just kind of stayed there for, I think I was that big for probably 6 or 7 years. And once we started talking about having kids, I started thinking like, okay, I'm going to need to make some changes. And then when my son was born, well, just before he was born, I decided that, hey, I need to lose some weight. So I started running, and I think that was about three years ago. So fast forward to now, I'm down about 90 pounds and I'm able to do a lot more physical activities than I could at the time. So it's been kind of a cool transition. Just learning a lot about myself, how to be disciplined. And I remember, well, years ago, I'd be listening to you guys do the recaps of the death hike. And I'd just be thinking to myself like, man, that'd be pretty cool to go on. Maybe one of these days. And Corey kept pushing me, trying to get me on. And then eventually I got into running and ultra running. And I was like, oh, hey, the death hike's realistic. And I remember making a comment and Steve's like, Jack, anytime you want to come, invite's open. And so I really held that close. And that was kind of a goal, was to get in shape for my family. But in the back of my mind too, it was like, man, I want to go on one of these hikes and see how I can do against these guys.
Yeah, and after like this year, you were impressive, man. I mean, you were up in the top five guys the entire hike. Yeah, all the way through. I mean, it was just absolutely impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, until you guys passed us in the last like 2 miles.
Yeah. 98% of the hike, you were right there. Like, that was just freaking awesome. And as a group, I mean, as a group, we did exceptional. I think like there's the most fit the group has been. And Jack was in the front, third of that the entire time.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I ran originally. I was with Dan, Anthony, and Nick, and our goal was like, hey, we got to run this thing. And so that's what we were doing. And they were the first three there. And that last 1,000 feet on the North Rim, that was kind of kicking my butt. So I was moving a little bit slower up the hill. And Tayson, or yeah, is it Tayson? Yeah. And Tyler, they passed me in the last couple hundred yards. But so yeah, I was feeling really strong, felt great. And then on the way back, was kind of hanging with Anthony, and Dan and Nick kind of just took off. Because Dan was like, all right, let's do this. So he was feeling really good, or at least he told himself he was feeling really good. It sounds like his calves blew up towards the end on that last climb. But yeah, and then my knee just decided it wasn't the day for it. So it kind of flared up and stopped me dead in my tracks. So I ended up having to walk the last like 20 miles, but it was really cool kind of being at the front of the pack and just feeling like all my training had paid off. So there's a lot of wins, definitely a lot of wins from that day. Fueling, hydration, like 90% of my physical capabilities. I was really proud of training. But then those stairs destroyed my calves. So I've got some more work to do there in the future. And then, yeah, if I can get my knee to just get stronger so it doesn't flare up going down big steep hills like that, I think that'll be a big win in the future.
It's so cool to me, story your story, Jack, of like, people here, like, you could talk about weight loss or life change, like, in that physical aspect, and there's just an inherent value of health there, yes, but I mean, just again to highlight, like, it's what it enables you to do. And I'm not saying this just from someone who was overweight and then lost weight, which is part of my story a long time ago, but as we've talked about, Steve, even fairly recently, like just not taking our abilities for granted and making sure that we're actually using it. And some of that's in our control and some of it's not. Like, I could get diagnosed with cancer tomorrow and have limitations, but there's also these self-imposed limitations because of our lifestyle and our choices and our habits that are really limiting what we're capable of. And yeah, it's sad for me, even in the ways that I do that to myself, of man, I'm capable of so much more. I just need to make better choices, be more disciplined, because it is all worth it in the end when you're able to get out and do more and experience more, whether that's seeing cool places, challenging yourself, spending time with guys, like all the things that make a death hike cool is all enabled by our abilities, which in a large way is dictated by our choices.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I can think like there's so many examples I think that in the last 10 years that pop into my head. One was playing with a friend's kids, and I couldn't keep up with his kids playing tag. And I remember my buddy calling me out. It was like 10 minutes in, and I had to sit down and take a breather. And that was like one of the big moments in my life. I was like, oh, I need to make some changes. And it still took me a couple years to make changes. And another big one was like we were elk hunting. And me and a buddy have been trying to locate this bull all day, and we finally like pinpointed him, and he was across the river. So we wasted the whole day on the wrong side of the river trying to find him. And we had a few hours left to daylight. Had I been in better shape, we could have been up to that bull in no time, probably about 1,000 feet to climb. And I just remember looking at my friend Mike saying, like, dude, not today. I can't do it. And I was just beat. And that was kind of the first time I really realized that for me being so heavy was limiting my ability to be successful, or at least get close enough to miss an elk. But yeah, so I've had a few of those moments. So you're talking about markets, like, oh, this me being limited is my fault. It wasn't something that was out of my control. It was all in my control. And so moments like that really stuck with me. And then there's moments like on these hikes when, like this year, talk about just a mental game. Like I knew it was going to be tough to do two laps, but the whole time I was very optimistic. I was like, okay, we're going to do it. And then when my knee went out, just because I experienced this before, I instantly went to like the worst place of like, oh, okay, I'm not going to do a second lap. And then I started like really getting upset. But the difference was it wasn't like, it was caused by something out of my control, my knee flaring up. But then instantly I went to that mental space and was going back and forth. I'm like, what do I do? Do I quit? Do I run 50 miles on the flats up by camp? Do I attempt to drop in tomorrow? And over the next 20 miles was really battling with my own self, trying to figure out like, okay, what do we do from here? Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of rambling. It went from something that was out of my control, and then all of a sudden my mind jumped in and was using that like kind of to create excuses or to, and so I was really fighting with trying to just alter the plan versus just like calling it quits. And in the end ended up calling it quits, so I didn't win that battle. But yeah.
What other takeaways, experiences, for good or bad, just come to mind? Like, what are you walking away from this death hike with? Obviously, you've mentioned some of that, but.
So some of the wins, this is like this is one of the first big activities I've done where I haven't had any gut issues. So that was awesome. So just I feel like I'm starting to learn how to fuel properly. Another win was, yeah, being at the front of the pack for the first half. That was awesome and really fun to just kind of push. The takeaway would probably be to do a little more research in the future. I think I just assumed that the Grand Canyon was just this groomed trail the whole way and didn't quite realize how rugged it was. And so learning that, yeah, when you've got 5,000 stairs, it's going to affect your body a little bit more than if you were just descending 5,000 feet on a groomed trail. Yeah, because as soon as we got to the bottom, on that first descent, my calves were tight and I hadn't experienced that before. So that's one takeaway. Yeah, the mental piece. I think just knowing that it was going to be a challenge and when I hit some of that adversity, I tried to respond well. But I think in the end, I still came up short of what I was capable of. And so there's a little piece of that that eats at me. And that's happened the last couple of big races I've tried of that distance. And so that's another piece that I just want to continue to work on just to be mentally stronger. Because it's going to help me in every area of my life, family, work, even with friendships, hunting, all those things. It rolls over. And so that's a pretty big takeaway that I have. And I think that there's beauty in failure. That's a big one too, because like we can always learn lessons from our failure, but also not beating myself up too much. And when we got woke up with a bunch of snow, and everybody was like, "Hey, I think we're just gonna call it." Like, it was like, "Well, this is still gonna be a fun day," because we finished a death hike last year. I think Dan and Justin rolled in. They ate some spaghetti, and then everybody just left. And so we didn't really have any connection. And this year was quite the opposite. Like we got to go down back to Vegas early and got a room with like 19 or 20 guys. And we just laughed and had fun and really enjoyed our time together. And so I got to connect with some guys that I haven't really got to spend time with. So yeah, even though we failed, we all accepted it, but we just made the most of it and had a great time until we flew out the next day.
Yeah, that's really cool. What, going back to the gut issues, just to pull on that thread a little bit, what are some of those changes you've made nutritionally that you think have helped you?
Yeah, I think I've started to learn how much sodium I should be having. Early on, I didn't consume any salt, and then I overcorrected and consumed way too much salt. And talking with Kyle, he's like, "Yeah, that goes straight to your colon." And so I would just have these violent, violent trail craps, and it was miserable. So I'd have like just gut pain the whole time. And eating less sugar, I think in my mind it's like, oh, everybody talks about drinking Coke, eating Oreos, M&Ms, whatever they have at these aid stations. And I got to thinking, like, well, if I was sitting at home eating this stuff, like I would have a really bad like stomach ache and I'd feel sick. So why do I think that if I'm going to run 50 miles, it's going to make me feel better? And so this year I really stuck to a lot less like candy type things. And so it was just like Honey Stinger waffles and chews, and then a lot of liquid calories. And then I was consuming probably about 13 to 1500 milligrams of sodium an hour. And I'm a pretty high sweater. And so I've kind of dialed in how much sodium I should be intaking, how many carbs an hour I can handle, things like that. So yeah, that was the biggest difference. And I actually had a plan. I had things mapped out. So every hour I was consuming a waffle, a pack of chews, a bottle of sodium, and then a drink of like Scratch, which is like a liquid calorie mix. And then every couple hours I'd throw in like an Uncrustable, or I did have a couple Snickers bars. And so, yeah, it just felt like I really had it kind of honed in. And so there's still a few things I'll adjust. But for the most part, it felt really good. So, yeah. And that took me 2 years of, and probably five or six ultras to kind of learn that system about myself. And so you hear everybody talk about different things that work for them, and then you try them, and sometimes they work great and sometimes they don't. So, yeah, it felt good to not have to deal with any of the gut issues.
That's cool you're able to stick to the schedule that you had set for yourself as far as eating.
Yeah.
I found it kind of hard on this one because we're just moving, that it was definitely trickier to stop. Like you just never wanted to stop because you were going to get behind in somebody.
Totally. Yeah. And so I think I knew, just knowing how my body shuts down if I don't stay hydrated, and I know how hard I can bonk if I don't have the fuel in my system, that was reason enough for me to stick with it. But to your point, yeah, it was really hard. 'Cause like, I remember we're just past Phantom Ranch, and Dan turns around and he yells at us. He's like, "Hey, hold each other accountable to your nutrition today. Like, we don't want to bonk." And then I spent the next 15 miles chasing them, and we stopped maybe twice for about 3 minutes each. And so you just didn't have to eat. And then it, like hindsight, Dan's like, "Yeah, I didn't stop and eat enough," which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah,
But it was
that's
hard. So
fun.
there was a point, so I'm like, okay, I just have to stop and get something out of my pack. Or I'd flip my pack around on my chest, and I'd be trying to like scoop Scratch the powder mix out of the bag into my Nalgene. It's blowing like 45 miles an hour, and I'm like trying to walk up the North Rim thinking like, dude, this is ridiculous, but okay, this is what we're doing. Yeah, so it was pretty funny. But yeah, that was the biggest piece, was just knowing how much I would crash if I didn't stay on top of it.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting, I mean, we've mentioned this in almost probably all the conversations with guys. The pace of things, the lack of breaks, kind of like this sense of urgency that it was so unique this year compared to others. And what I find fascinating about it, now having thought about it more, talked with guys more, because I mean, I did that, but I was also, that was me, and I wasn't sure if everyone else was doing that, right? I find it really interesting hearing from more guys now that almost everyone kind of had that sense of urgency, just lack of breaks, almost like, I don't want to say rushed feeling, but yeah, just very short, quick. But that was like, it sounds like from front to back, right? Like almost everyone was on that same type of pace, schedule, what have you. But that wasn't like pre-planned, premeditated, talked about, but it kind of penetrated everyone's experience, which is pretty interesting to think about now in the hindsight.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it was, I'm sure a lot of it was just wanting to compete with ourselves and see if the training had paid off or lack thereof. Some guys didn't really train much, but you could tell they still wanted to see how they would hold up and fare. And I think the other piece of it too is maybe this is one of the first times I think you guys have done a hike on such a like well-known trail, and then it had so many. Well, everybody that does it keeps track of their time. And so I think for a few guys, it was like, hey, we want to see how we hold up against other known times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, maybe, I don't know. What were your takeaways, Mark? Like, what was it for you that wanted you to kind of push hard and see how you could do?
I mean, I think I was trying to balance pushing hard, not just physically, but like pushing hard from an efficiency perspective to try and get it as done as quickly as possible to give myself enough time for a second day that I knew would be slower.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then I was also trying to not push too hard, my personal like pace wise, heart rate, et cetera. So I was trying to make up time by trying to stay efficient and stay within myself on day one, but then make up that time by not taking a lot of breaks or being, short on breaks, et cetera. So it's kind of like this combination of physically going steady and then trying to just be, as efficient, I think, as possible. Because in my head, it's like, I want to get back to be able to get as much rest as possible to then be able to turn around and start as early as possible. Because in all reality, like day two, you'd be on a time crunch
Yeah.
of getting back. Like, say, you're starting super, super early Saturday morning, but then not knowing how much longer a second round would take to then you have to be back Sunday morning to essentially leave, right? So yeah, I think for in my head, like day two felt like it was on a very tight schedule, and so day one was all about being efficient, and saving time.
Yeah, that's smart. And I think that, yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And I think that's one thing that maybe the front of pack, they were in such a hurry to get done. I think that they almost overdid it a little bit. And I think
Well, yeah.
I'd been right there with them. If I'd have been pushing that hard, it would have felt great to finish, but I don't know if I would have set myself up for success to finish day two, or even start day two. Like, yeah, I know a couple guys were like, oh yeah, went way too hot. Like, not feeling great. I planned on doing a second one, but there's no way. Yeah, so that's a lot of wisdom on your part. I think that people could take away in the future is like, even out of the excitement, hey, slow down just a little bit. Make sure you're taking care of yourself because the race doesn't start till mile 50. And in that case, none of us made it to the starting line.
It's one of those things most of us have done a lot of the death hikes, but they're all so different. And so, yes, we learn lessons on, like, say, nutrition or, taking care of feet, et cetera. But this hike was unique. It was a different experience. And I know for a fact that we could all go do it and do it much more effectively. This route, understanding the course, understanding the strategy that would be most effective. Yeah, I mean, it freaking drives me nuts, honestly. Because
Yeah.
it's
Have
like,
you
yeah,
noticed?
we know more now than we did going into it, and I feel like we could all go in and do a lot better.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's like I've been like tempted to go back to Bora and try that again. And then I'm already like, okay, when can I get down to the Grand Canyon again and try it
Yeah.
again just to like do better? But yeah, I think in a nutshell, I just want to express my gratitude for being able to come on trips like this. And to Steve for making it happen every year and for just for me personally helping me get out there. Yeah, if it wasn't for Steve's help, I wouldn't have been able to come on the trip this year. And so, yeah, just very thankful. And that was part of the piece, like hanging out with everybody back at the hotel that night. What a unique group of gentlemen, like to be with guys. There's no drama. Everybody's just having fun. Everybody's very genuine. And we come from all over the country. And I just thought how special it is that a brand like XO can bring all these unique, really tough, strong individuals together. But they're all just trying to be better, but they also just want to have fun. And so being able to spend time with everybody, it was really special this year. Yeah. And just, yeah, what a cool guys. So.
Yeah. The camaraderie is such a huge aspect to the hike, and it keeps getting better every year as we obviously we got new guys coming every year, one or two new guys and a couple guys, kind of fade away, but the core of the group and getting to know each other, and it's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely.
For you, Anthony, what, I don't know if you know specifically, but just to give listeners context, how many death hikes roughly have you done, or what number was this one for you?
I think this is number 6 or 7. We've done 300 milers, that. I don't know, 6 or 7. Yeah, the first 100 miler was the first one I did.
Okay.
Then we had a bear hunt, the Frank.
Oh, 17.
Yeah.
I don't think you've missed one.
No, I haven't. No, yeah. So maybe this is number 7. Yeah.
So 17, 18, 19, yeah. 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Yeah, this is number 8.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was slated to be the third 100 miler. So that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I know, to jump back to last year, after that didn't go into like you expected, you were pretty angry and immediately signed up and did an ultra run like a week later.
Yeah, I actually signed up for an ultra run on the drive home.
Oh, it was on the drive home?
Yeah. I don't know if I signed up for it while I was driving, but I'd found one. And just felt like I'd done all this training and, so anticlimactic with the way it ended. And I was just bitter about it and trying to decide if I made the right decision, which, it's funny. I was thinking about that because I hunt pretty much alone unless I take my kids out, and even scouting. I mean, I spend a lot of time alone in the woods, and there's a mental struggle I deal with between pulling the plug, which I've only done maybe once or twice in the last 10 years hunting. It's like, at what point is it really no longer safe? Or at what point are you just kind of being a pansy? So like, you always want to keep pushing and pushing and pushing and breaking those boundaries and raising the ceiling. And last year, I don't know, it seemed like the right decision. And maybe I think a couple of us talked ourselves into it. And afterwards it's like, God, well, they made it. So, I mean, they're not dead. So, yeah, but I was definitely bent out of that one, or after that one. And then that Friday, driving up to that ultra, I was listening to the podcast with you two and Dan, and it got me fired up even more. Like, I got upset again and ended up changing the course length that I ran. I ran the longer one. So I kind of had to lie my way to get into that race. And I'm glad I did. I wanted to do something that I hadn't done before. So
yeah,
it worked out.
So yeah. Last year, in early end of the death hike, you're angry, you do the ultra. I bring all that up to say, I'm sure you were hungry going into this year's death hike, but you're also one of the guys that, that just had a great, not only base fitness, but really between last year and this year, just a ton of training, ran ultras, etc. Like, I'm sure, I don't know how prime you were feeling, but from the outside, I look at you going into this year and I'm like, he's going to be hungry because of last year. Probably hiking a little angry because of last year, and a super fit dude. So yeah. Were you feeling pretty prime going into this year?
Yeah, I felt really good. And I felt good last year. And the one change I did was a lot of times, like during hunting season, you're not going to go out and train like a crazy person, because I think I hunted 9 weeks in a row this year. So I was getting plenty in. But right after hunting season, I didn't let off with the low intensity cardio base, and I kept rolling it. And I think that helped. And then when I picked back up into serious training on my program in, I think, February, I already felt really good. And then we tweaked a couple of things with training this year that just paid dividends. So yeah, I felt really good. And I think I could have done the next day without a problem, maybe a couple hours slower, but yeah, I felt awesome.
I would say you were probably the in the best shape, the most ready to go for this hike out of everybody?
Outside of Nick, but he's
Nick?
that's a
Yeah.
different story. Yeah. So Nick, he's 23 years younger than me. Did you guys know he, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this online, but he's the all-time leading rusher at College of Idaho.
Oh,
he played running
didn't
back
know
there
that.
For 4 years. And yeah, he's the all-time leading rusher. The dude's a freak. And he had like a pro day with, I think, the Ravens or something. So I don't feel bad if he beats me. And I think he could have probably run away from us. But yeah, no, I felt really good. So I wouldn't have had a problem going another day. And like, I'm having a hard time. I took a couple of days off this week, but I'm going to go run today. So I'm ready to roll again.
Ready to roll. So
yeah,
what?
I got a couple of races this summer that I'm really looking forward to that are big and hard. So I feel like I still, that's why I was kind of pissed that we didn't finish this one. Cause it's like, I really would like to do 100 and under 48 or preferably under 36. Like I still don't know that we've found our limits. And I'm sure a lot of guys, you two included, are in the same boat where it's like, yeah, we did it, but still haven't got to that point where we found that limit.
Yeah, I think for me, there's I just need to get to a whole nother level of training to keep pushing like this, but avoid injury. That's where my left knee was kind of good, but act like I'm regretting less and less not going on day two. Like yes, by yesterday afternoon, it was pretty painful walking around. But I just need to take it to a whole nother, yeah, whole nother level so we can keep doing this like really hard crap. Yeah. I actually
Well,
had the thought. I had the thought of, oh, you know, maybe it's not smart to be like to really push just from an injury perspective, right? Like we're, you know, maybe we'll just scale this back to doing like really hard 24-hour adventures. Because my initial thought on this was like I want to go back in a few weeks and do this again. But I was like, maybe I'll just do one rim to rim to rim and do it as fast as I can. Because this year, I mean, I was at like 75% the whole day. I never once overexerted myself. The entire mindset was I'm going into day two, going to be strong. Now I'm like, you know, well, we didn't make day two, but if I had done it, I probably would have come out of there limping pretty bad. And who knows, you know, what kind of injury that would have led to, or just, you know, taking 4 to 6 weeks to heal up instead of like where you're at right now. A few days later, you're like, I'm ready to go for a run. So.
well, it's funny because three of us talked about going back there and trying to do it twice as fast as we
Yeah.
could. But,
Yeah.
and the injury prevention, I mean, obviously, as we age, it gets harder. And I sometimes think like the hardest part is training because you put someone hours and miles in, like staying injury free is huge. And I've got some philosophies about that. And I think the strength training is really, really big. And the more I dive into this and do it myself and research it and talk to people that know more than me, that's big. And I've also got some feelings about how often you train with weight because of the added stress on the joints, where you can't train with weight 7 times a week and get that volume without injury. But
Train
you still
with weight in a backpack or just like lifting weights in the gym too?
within a backpack, in a backpack.
You're talking about weighted movement, not lifting weights.
Yeah, correct. Correct. And I think like 3, 4 times a week, like it's just that much more stress on your joints, where you could go hike your butt off or run your butt off and you'll still get that cardio without the stress of the weight all the time, but you still need to use some weight at some point. So, and it also depends on what you're training for. I mean, I think training for hunting is 100, I wouldn't say 100% different, but definitely different than training for an endurance event like this. So, you know, when we're hunting, like how often do we do a sustained 5 or 6 hour hike in or pack out? I mean, occasionally, but yeah, and that again, that's another topic.
I do think to your point, Steve, of like just hearing you say all that, because I've had some thoughts and looked at this, and I'll pick on you because you and I have talked more, obviously, including like offline outside the podcast, and I know more about your training. But I do think that the expectation we set for like this year and for the death hike in all reality is 100% doable. But I also feel like At the end of the day, it takes a longer training cycle and more time than you've actually given it, right? To be able to do that, to your point, without severe consequence, right? 'Cause like, yeah, like you trained hard, I trained hard, but we're still dealing with like a relatively limited amount of time, and also honestly did it in a fairly compressed window, which is okay 'cause we have a good base fitness, so it's not like we're starting from the ground floor per se, but in all reality, I think to do it well and to do it without, or to do it with minimizing massive recovery or risk of injury, it does take a whole different level of training than what we've done.
And time. And that's,
And
you know,
time,
that's just
yeah, and
something.
that's the limiting factor, right? For all three of us, right? Like busy jobs, family, kids, other interests. It's
Exactly.
like, I mean, at the end of the day, the longest training hike I did was 4 miles, or sorry, 4 hours. And
Yeah.
it's as much as I wanted to go and do more, it's like, it's, I mean, it is quite literally, it's like skipping sleep. And it's not like I'm sleeping 10 hours a night already, right? And it's freaking tough, man. And when you're saying, oh yeah, longest is 4 hours, and then to go do, you know, a 40 plus hour or 40-ish hour effort probably to do both, because it's going to be a slower pace than the second one, it's like, man, that's a freaking stretch.
I think it could be done in the same amount of time or even potentially less, but with just much more precision, much more targeting built into exactly what you're doing. And Anthony, I know you're very structured, and Mark, you are way more so than I am too, but I think you could, yeah, I generally just go for a hike and do a couple things here and there. I don't have any structure to it, so that's where I think I could really improve, at least for myself.
But to that point, it was what one thing I learned. I mean, I think you're right, and I agree with that, and that's why I abide by that theory. But there's a couple ways to skin a cat here, because when you guys came up on the North Rim, not that far behind us, we were all kind of like in shock. I'm like, dude, we ran. I mean, we didn't run real hard going up, we ran hard going out. But I'm like, damn, I can't believe how close they are. Like, that was impressive. And I'm like, all they're doing is just hiking really fast, which is kind of what you've told me you were doing with all your training. So I'm like, well, clearly that works. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways to do it.
When I told you, Anthony, like, and this is probably a different conversation, and we can talk more about this, but some of the strength stuff I did, which I did with more intentionality and a different consistency than I've ever done, I've never felt like, from muscular endurance, lower body strength, and honestly think it helped my joint issues tremendously. Like, I've never felt as strong. There was never once, like, on climbs where like my legs were given out. I wasn't muscularly sore the next day. I had some joint soreness, but even that was less than I expected. So I definitely feel like I learned a lot in training this year. And for the time I did have, I feel really good about how I spent the time and what I did. So I am excited to like continue to explore that and then see what's possible.
For sure. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing that was on my mind with training this year, in the past, I used to just do whatever during the week and then these big monster 8, 10 hour workouts on the weekend. But this year, and I work with a guy at Uphill Athlete, we did a couple of those, but I was like, you know, I don't want to spend my weekends training. Like, I want a snowmobile with my kids. I want to go to their football games. Like, I don't want to take time away from my family for my own personal agenda. So I did a lot more training during the week, like just a lot of 2 hour runs or 2 hour hikes, you know, a couple of those during the week. That way on the weekend, I only had to go out for 3 or 4 hours, which I could, you know, go bust out at 5 a.m. and, you know, do stuff with the kids the rest of the weekend. So, you know, I think it's just about overall volume and time that adds up. And
The years where I've performed better are just years when I'm just consistently hiking, you know, yeah, 1 hour hikes 4 or 5 days a week, or just moving. It could be hike one day, mountain bike the next day, but those are the years I've done best. Yeah.
yeah, it makes sense.
Well, jumping into the hike, Anthony, what were, I mean, it's so fun because like everybody has different experiences. You and I've talked a bit, but also don't feel like I have a full grasp on your experience of the hike. Like, How did things go? Any takeaways from, you know, the actual, like, during the hike?
Well, you know, our first, so I kind of partnered up pretty quick with Nick and Dan. We kind of, Nick, Dan and I had the same mentality going into it. And you guys see Dan's post on Instagram or Facebook this week?
I haven't. No.
It's awesome. Like, I love the way he articulates things and puts it together. But anyways, so you'll have to look at it. But so we kind of partnered up pretty quick, and we were just ready to go hard, which we did for the most part. And the only thing I regret is that not maybe soaking in everything, the experience of the canyon, because we thought, okay, we'll take more photos and more videos on the second lap, which ended up not happening. But it was cool. You know, I'm baffled by how the heck they made that trail on the side of the mountain. And the other big, you know, another thing was I had no idea, like, the Grand Canyon, you know, the village or main area sat at, you know, close to 7,000 feet. That kind of caught me off guard. I just thought, man, it's in the desert, right? It's a couple thousand feet. So, you know, I'd never been there and hadn't researched it much. But no, I mean, I kind of had like a game plan. Like, I think the first time through is going to take this long, and the second time will take this long. And I don't know. I'm kind of really meticulous about it. I mean, I had everything laid out for day two with clothing and everything. Like, I'm going to go back and do this for an hour, turn around, change, and this. And so, I mean, I think the hike went, it was good. It was fun. You know, I regret that I didn't get to spend as much time with some of the other guys because everyone's moving at a different pace. But no, I mean, it was really cool. That last pull up the South Rim was tough. I'm surprised by the number of people that actually go in there. You know, the first morning as we're dropping down, you see all these people hiking out and like dads with their kids carrying their backpacks and stuff. I'm like, holy cow, like that's a pretty good hike for these little guys. So
We had that, like, we're like, that's a lot of people's versions of a full-on death hike is just come like hiking down a Phantom Ranch and coming out. Like,
yeah,
sure,
I
I
can't
believe it.
imagine. I mean, some of the walks of life we saw coming
That's a
down and
true.
up that thing, I was just like, what the hell are you doing here?
Oh yeah.
Like, I can't imagine how rough, like, some of those people got to be hurting. That is very, I guess,
Yeah.
impressive. I don't know what the word is.
Well, it was obvious there was some tourists there from other countries, and there was a group of older gentlemen coming up when we were coming out. I'm like, man, these guys, they're definitely not, they don't look like they're ready for this. I doubt they have headlamps. I hope they're okay. Yeah, it was cool. So, and you know, I always, it's when you get that much time on the trail by yourself, your mind wanders a lot and think about things. And, you know, you go through the stages where, oh, this is awesome. I can't wait to do it again. And you go through the stages like, I'm never doing this again. And I hate Steve. You know, and one of the things that I did think about, and this is why I was referring to Dan's post that he wrote, was, you know, how much longer do I want to do this? How much longer? I'm not getting younger. Do I want to push myself this hard? And then one of the things I came up with was like, it'd be really cool for especially my oldest kid or all my boys to do one of these with me one day. That would be a treat, you know, where they're mentally and physically strong enough to endure this, which I think is something that especially the mental aspect you gain with age. You know, I think it's there's no way I had the same mental resilience when I was 20 years old. So to implement that or to teach a kid that at a younger age, I think is just a lifelong treat that will serve them forever, you know. So that was something that I keep thinking about. And same thing with, and there's a lot of us have, you know, you too, you know, with kids and boys. Like, it'd be really cool to go in here one day and do that with the boys. That'd be awesome. Yeah. So maybe a few years.
Yeah, that mental
Yeah.
thing with age is something I've been thinking about, like, in a few different contexts. But I forget who it was, but someone asked me, like, how did this death hike compare to others, or like, how hard was it compared to others? And I thought about that a little bit during the hike, kind of it, you know, when it felt more difficult to me, like in those times where it's like, oh, this is hard. But it was like, well, how hard, right? Like, how bad do I feel compared to whether it's another death hike or like a tough hunt or something like that. And basically, it's like it's harder to quantify any of that or label it, because the more hard things you've done, the less extremes you experience, right? Like if you go from nothing to death hike, you're like, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. But when you're on your eighth death hike, like, yeah, they're all different and had nuances, and some are harder than others. But it's like that gap between what's hard and what's the hardest thing ever. It's like you're just pushing more and more experiences over towards that hardest thing ever side of the equation. And then it becomes less of like less clear. I'm like, well, I don't know, like, just it's hard, but I've done a lot of hard things. And that's not saying that in a boasting way. It just gets a lot, there's just less disparity, I guess, I'm beginning to realize. So I think, yes, you get stronger and yes, you become more capable. But in terms of like mentally tough and age, I think it's an well, depending on how you live, but accumulation of
Sure.
experiences that you just have more stacked against that quote unquote hard side of life. And I think that does something for you.
Well, and I think it helps in life. I mean, this, people, why do you do this? Like, that sounds horrible. It's like, well, to challenge myself. I'm, as we age, I mean, you can even look at this from a scientific point. After about the age of 30, you stop producing lean body mass and you start to decline every year. Unless you continue to work it. So either you're growing or you're dying. Like it's one, it's at a certain point in life, it's one or the other. So I think you need to keep pushing yourself. So that's part of the why for me. And it's never a race against everybody. It's always a race against myself. Like how hard can I go? But when you do these things that are hard, and like it's taken me a while to realize this, but the day-to-day stresses of life don't seem so stressful. You guys know what I do for work, and my staff will be like, God, you never stress out about anything. Aren't you worried about this or that? I'm like, no, like that's why are you gonna stress about that? Like if someone in my family is deathly ill, like I'll stress about that. But when you do really hard things, especially in nature where you're exposed by yourself and you make it through and live, I think it makes everyday life and society a little easier. It's stress becomes relative. So that's kind of my opinion about doing real hard things. So when something does come up that is difficult in life, whatever that might be, you could handle it better because you've taxed yourself mentally and physically before.
Yeah, it's absolutely the main driving force behind the entire existence of the death hike. Do hard things so other things are easier.
100%. And it's good. It's good for you as a human, as a man, as a father, as a husband. It's good. And this world needs more people like that today, more than ever.
To jump to the end, Anthony, when we got back to camp, when I finished the hike, got back to camp, your whole corner, like your crew of the guys you did the hike with, your shelters were, kind of on one side of the campground. I didn't see any of you guys. It was all quiet, and I was like, oh man. And it was dark by this time, and I was like, oh, they're freaking geared up. They're crashed. They're in the tent. They're trying to get some rest before the second attempt. And like, that's what I thought was going down. And then at some point along the way, someone mentioned like, oh no, they went to get pizza, they're done. And I was just like, what? Like, I thought you guys were in the tent, like, just getting rest and ready to go for day two. So I legitimately don't know like what went into that, what decisions were made, what conversations were had, et cetera. So I'm personally curious about that.
Nick, Tayson, and I came out first, and then Dan and Tyler were like 20 minutes behind us. And obviously we came, it was cold. I mean, you guys know that. We're wearing shorts and the snow is blowing sideways. And I was actually grateful for that last 3 mile little hike out because it was a nice cool down and felt really good. But
That's
the
a stark
question was,
contrast to mine.
yeah, I had
I thought it
hypothermia
was
and was
great.
tense as could be.
Well, and we had debated. We wanted to run it. I'm like, okay, if we hit the rim at this time, that gives us 30 minutes to go 3 miles. We'll just jog it out because Steve said we can't do it in 16 hours, so we need to prove him wrong. So By the time we got up, we were trying to navigate back. We kind of made a wrong turn, so we had to bushwhack through there. So we came in, it's a little over 16 hours. But we're like, man, the big question is we have no idea how far people are behind us. And we were concerned about trail conditions, not at the bottom, but especially obviously the North Rim had snow. And I pulled up a satellite radar of the weather, and it was getting pounded. Like there was a big cell sitting over the North Rim. But my concern was the trail conditions on the South Rim with the snow and like on those wooden blocks, those weird steps, like it might be really slick and icy and potentially dangerous. So we were just kind of waiting until everybody came out to see what they wanted to do. But we knew we had some time and like, let's go. We were all going to make our meals, change and get dry and then make the decision. But we went and ate and we're kind of waiting for everybody to come back and see what happened. And if they decided they wanted to go, we're like, yeah, let's go. But if nobody was going, then it was like, well, I don't know. So, and then when Steve came and, you know, you came over to my tent, like two or three and like, hey, I haven't heard from so-and-so. And like, then it's like, okay, like,
yeah,
what are we doing here? And if it takes them 23 hours to get out, how long is it going to take them to do another set? Another concern was like, if we did go back in, and everybody did, you know, we'd had a little bit of a time crunch. Like we had to leave at 9 or 10 on Sunday to catch our flights. So I was just kind of waiting to see what everyone was going to do. Yeah. But, and we were kind of hoping the snow was going to let off because looking at the forecast, it said it should be done by like 2 a.m. or something. We're like, okay, if it clears, then we can go. But man, it just didn't let off. And in hindsight, probably the right decision. But yeah, we were still kind of up in the air.
Yeah, I was dead set on, like, I mean, I got back to camp. I was dead set on, at least I was going to go back down to Phantom in the morning and get to Phantom and see how I felt. And obviously that weather kept getting worse. And then I started worrying about all the guys out there. And
yeah.
And then, you know, the last group obviously got in after 3 a.m. and I'd been awake that entire time worrying about those guys. So that kind of threw a big wrench in the plans.
Yeah, that was tough. And, you know, the thing about dropping to Phantom, that was, we had talked about it. We said either we're going to go and go all the way or not. Like, there's no point to do it half-assed. Like, either we do the whole thing or not. Like,
I was playing mental tricks on myself because I knew if I got to Phantom that I wasn't going to turn around, you know, unless, it was just like, what was going to really mess me up would have been my IT band knee issue. And so it's like, all right, if I can get down to Phantom and be okay, then I know I'm good. But if I, you know, I would have known within the first 2,000 feet dropping down what that was going to look like. So
that South Rim was steeper than I remembered.
We flew down that in the morning and coming back up out of it was, I definitely was like kind of in the me, Jory and Mark hiking together and just kind of just head down, plugging away, starting to get dark and, like, oh man, we got, I mean, what was it? It's like 4,800 feet. And I'm like, we got to be at like 3,000 feet so far. We've been crushing, just moving good pace. And then I realized, like, I haven't seen that halfway sign yet.
Yeah.
Like, where the hell is that? And we were still like 40 minutes from the halfway sign or something like that. It was like, oh crap. And then coming out, it was, you know, pitch black and you're like, oh, we got to be getting close. And then you see a headlamp, you know, another 1,000 feet above you. You're like, son of a bitch, this thing just keeps going and going. Yeah. And once you get in the dark, you lose all perspective. And yeah, it was,
yeah, that sign that said you're at like 4,800 feet and have 3.7 miles to go. That was like so demoralized. I'm like, no way. Like, we've had to have climbed more than that. Like, that can't be right. And I pulled out my Onyx. I'm like, oh, damn it. So, oh, well. That was good. Well.
So what's some big takeaways? Training was freaking on point for you.
Training was awesome. Like I said, I changed some things this year with strength and actually higher intensity stuff. I did Zone 3 work almost every week for 2 months and it made a huge difference. The training was awesome. And yeah, I think not taking the winter off, you know, like kind of just chilling and still doing Zone 2 stuff at least twice a week, all through November, December, and January. I just started way stronger than before. And I could look at my times of workouts I'd done last year and I was already faster. So yeah, it was good. And gear was perfect. And yeah, man, I felt awesome. Yeah, I'm ready to go do the next thing.
What do you want to do next year?
Oof, something harder. But, you know, to that point, so this is the third year in a row where we didn't complete the entire course.
I know. That's
Dan
pissing
and
me
Justin
off.
Were really close last year, minus missing Leatherman. And again, probably the right call, but it's like, damn, dude, we haven't completed what we've set out to. And it's like, and that is always a little anticlimactic, which, like, that's why Sunday night, like, dude, let's just come back down here and run this thing in a couple of weeks and let's do 100 miles and see how fast we can do it. But fortunately, like I said, I got an event in June and July, and the one in June is huge. So I'm looking forward to that. But for next year, I don't know. I got to think about that. You know, someone mentioned Alaska.
Yeah, I threw that out as another option. Yeah, I'd go back and do that original route.
Yeah, that would be cool. We just need to, it seems like, God, weather has kicked our butts two of the last 3 years, or snow. I mean, arguably two of the last 3 years. So, and you don't want to do it so close to hunting season, but I don't know. Something that's harder, but that we can finish.
Yeah, I know. We haven't had a proper death hike in 3 years. They've been almost like we need to rename it like the challenge, the death challenge or something like that. Like not, not even the hike challenge. Right. Like it hasn't been like some of the early ones. And we've talked about like we've learned so much. It's kind of hard to replicate those because you don't put yourself in such bad position with fuel and hydration and taking care of your feet and whatnot. But we can still learn, evolve, and keep pushing. And I think if we had done what we set out to this year, that would have been pretty fantastic. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd go back and do it again next year. I mean, it was cool. But yeah, you know, on the flip side, those and then when you do complete it, you're like, oh, maybe that was too easy. So, and it's hard because every year we get better. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that bar is going to keep rising, and you don't want to make it so untamable that you don't get it. Like, it should be a stretch. That's what it should be, a stretch. Yeah. So, yeah. So, oh, well, we'll see.
Well, Gabriel, let's start here, man. To set context for listeners, what's your history with death hikes? Meaning, how many have you done? You know, what number was this for you? That type of thing.
Yeah, this was number two. I did the one last year, and it was that the one last year was like my first experience. And the fact that very few people. I mean, the third peak was almost inaccessible by the time we needed to get to where we needed to get to before the light went away. That one was a kick to the shorts for sure. It was good. And then, yeah, so this is only number two, and I, just tried to come in and, hammer down as hard as I could. And yeah, so only two is the short answer.
Yeah. This year was two, and two dramatically different adventures. Yeah. Like trail, off trail exposure, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. The fact that we had a trail the entire time, although that, you know, the log part of the trail with all those big deep ruts coming out of the south rim was a little brutal, but yeah, not being in scree fields and, you know, hanging off the side of mountains was definitely different than last year, but they're both just amazing experiences.
What did you learn maybe from the first one that you took to and applied towards training and mindset and just managing throughout this hike?
With the training, I think the biggest thing I did was try and elongate a lot of the training. So it's tough where I live to get any elevation. And what I'm finding is that it's really tough to like artificially simulate elevation without, you know, driving an hour and a half to get to the mountains and actually climb with a pack on. And so I tried to elongate like the run. So my wife printed out this, like an ultra marathon plan. And she's like, all right, you're whatever, six, or I think it was like 15 weeks out. There's a 16 week plan. You need to skip week one and just go from there. And so I did that. And to the end that I was getting some pretty long, runs in. And then I did a couple of hikes at a couple of places where I just beat the crap out of myself for like 4 hours running up and down these, steps, but I think the longest run I did was 22 miles. And so I went, you know, started out slower, doing like, I did, you know, one at 7 miles, and that taught me a lot about like food intake too. Cause I'm like, oh, it's only 7 miles. I can run, you know, with no food. So I bring like a small water bottle, and then my feet started to hurt at the 7 mile mark. And I'm like, holy crap, I guess I got to eat. So then I went to 10 miles. Then I got to 12, 14, a couple of 18s, a 22. And man, I learned a ton about the need for way more intake than what I had thought. And then, water as well. And I did do one like pretty long, I say long, not compared to what we just did, but long hike. It was 14 miles in the snow, and it was like walking through a slushy machine the entire time up above Boulder. And, on that one, I learned there's a huge difference between hiking and running 14 miles for sure. So I was like, oh, you're only going 14 miles. You need, you know, this much in the way of like gummy bears and this much in the way of water. And that was a mistake. It was, I started cramping up in places I didn't know there were muscles, and so needed electrolytes. And so I learned a lot about electrolytes and took a ton of that. So that I wouldn't cramp up, you know, on the death hike. But yeah, learned just so much in the training about, the body's ability to, like produce longevity. And then as long as what I'm honestly finding is that if I treat my body like a machine, right, where I continuously train, number one, but continuously do what needs to be done in the way of like food intake and water intake, it'll do what I ask it to do. It might not be as fast as I want it to be, but it'll keep going as long as I keep putting, I mean, it's like almost like a car, right? You put gas, air, and oxygen, or oxygen and electricity into it, and it's gonna fire. It just, not always as efficiently as you'd like at times.
I love that. You know, it's a really cool perspective way to look at it, because it's, I think, as a general rule, any random person listening to this podcast can probably do 20 times what they think they're capable of before their body would truly just, you know, lay down on the ground and go to sleep.
Yeah, I would agree. I would totally agree with that. That was apparent at the South Rim climbing out. Like, the mental grit portion was just, it was amazing. I've never worked that hard. Never been up that long that I can, you know, and I mean, aside from like partying in high school, never been awake for like 24 hours before, and doing that level of exertion. And you're exactly right. Boy, the brain can push you through a ton or sap you real quick too, right? If you let the evil come in, you that dark spot. I know Boshma and I were talking, or I heard him talking about that, you know, going to that darker spot where you are by yourself and you're hiking for a while and you're in pain, and just being able to try and work your way out of that. But without doing this type of an activity, I don't know that most folks ever get to that quote, you know, darker physical activity spot where they can allow themselves to kind of sink into it a little bit and then work your way back out of it. And I got, you know, just a couple of notes on how to, you know, work your way out of that too. But man, it's I will say it would be a completely different hike if you were by yourself for 50 miles and trying to work through that mental game, by yourself, versus having, you know, one or two dudes with you to try and, you know, when one starts to fall into that slump, the other two are keeping him up, or the other one is keeping him up, stuff like that. So it would be a completely different hike if you had to do that by yourself. Man, I think it would be far more mentally taxing than it is when you have, you know, a couple of guys around you.
And just to give listeners context, I think, to that, Gabriel, you're speaking to a bit, is you and it was Justin Miles, right?
Yeah, Christian.
Christian, yeah.
Oh, Christian, that's right. All right. So you, Justin, and Christian were the last guys to come out of the canyon, and, you know, as you're talking about.
Yeah, why you
got to, like,
bring up old stuff?
Well, I'm trying to give context to, like, you talking about dark moments, et cetera. You talking about, you know, the mental versus physical. Like, at the end of the day, you know, and I'm saying this having heard you say, like, this is the hardest thing you've done.
For sure.
And I know it was a struggle, especially towards the end. And you guys were in the canyon the longest. But as you're just talking about, you were there together. I'm just trying to provide context as you talk
no,
about
no, no, you're
doing
good.
it together. Or dark
I'm just
spot.
busting chops. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I did, to your point, like you were in a dark spot. You were physically, mentally exhausted. But you had dudes there with you to share that with and to like to get you out of there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It was, and it's funny, you would see kind of ebbs and flows in everybody. Like there were times where I was like, man, I'm feeling pretty darn good. And one of the other guys was like, I am struggling. And it was funny because there were struggles at different points too. Like the flats were awesome for me. I felt good on the flats. But the downhill is just absolutely, especially that the dropping in initially, man, I made a mistake and didn't roll out my IT band, and I should have rolled it out before we started, but it like seized up almost instantly on those downhills. And I was, for a couple of other reasons, you know, little, I don't know why, if it was just nerves or whatever, but just being honest, I had to, before we even like hit the trail, I had to pee like three times. And so I stopped three times within that first like 3 miles from where we camped to the trail to pee. And that you wouldn't think like it'd be that big of a deal, you could catch up, but man, these guys move fast and they're on a mission. And so like three pee stops and you're there, you know, you're not seeing any headlamps anymore. But yeah, I'd have those guys with me, you know, from, I think Phantom Ranch all the way through the rest of it was pretty darn key.
You said you mentioned in there, you made some notes about, was it the mental stuff or what were those notes you mentioned?
When we got back to the van, I made a bunch of notes and just like randomly, you know, was kind of asking guys like, what did we learn? What would you do differently? What, you know, some of the things, and I can rattle some of them off just real quick, but, and some were kind of funny, but it's like, I never would have thought like the IT band thing specifically. In all my training, part of what I was doing was foam rolling, especially before those big long runs. And I don't know if it was just, I was so excited or I didn't think I would need to or whatever, but we woke up that morning and I didn't even, I stretched a little bit, but didn't foam roll. And if I was smart, I would have jumped up on that table on a Nalgene bottle and just rolled the heck out of those IT bands. And I didn't, but, because Justin had trouble on previous death hikes before, he said that O'Berti had thrown him on the bed of a truck and rolled out his IT band with a trekking pole, and it was just like excruciating, but it helped significantly. So about every time we would stop, I would stick my leg out and run the trekking pole down it, and it was like you could feel this ball in the like a knot in that just above my knee. And man, that I think that being able to just kind of even periodically roll it out was huge. It loosened it up just enough to where it wasn't so excruciating that I couldn't move. So that was a big one. I think more, so you want me to just rattle them off? Is that okay?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
All right. So, more solid food for me. I talked to Kyle a lot about like what to eat, especially since last year. So last year I brought way more food than I needed and I brought heavy food. And I think I was like, you know, talking to Kyle and, you know, a calorie is a calorie. And so I'm like, well, you could run that whole thing on like Tailwind and gummy bears. And he's like, well, yeah, you could. And I'm like, cool. So this year and he says, I told you, Gabe, that you could, but it's not going to be comfortable. And I don't recall that, but
you just heard the you could part. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, sweet, Tailwind and gummy bears. And so I put Tailwind and it was actually oatmeal cream pies. And that's pretty much what I ran the whole thing on. And then one of the green belly bars, which was super helpful. But yeah, so takeaway would be for sure somewhere in between last year and this year. Like I need a little more substance, I think, whether that's, you know, bars or meat sticks or whatever. I need a little more substance in the belly aside from just trying to run it on those powdered calories, which are lightweight and nice. But man, I don't know if it's going to be enough. The other thing was don't save food for day two. I was like, oh, I'm rationing food for day two. You know, I left a bunch back at camp. I was like, okay, this is what you allotted. And I had allotted myself about 18 hours worth of food calorie wise, thinking, okay, I can do this in 18 hours. And then, obviously ended up being a little wrong about that coming out 23 hours later. So more food would have been, I had the food, I had extra food. I should have just thrown in a couple more things to be able to do it. So don't save food for day two, because there might not be a tomorrow. So eat what you need to eat, and then worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow bladders, like the bladders are a pain to fill, but man, it was so worth it in that I could kind of sip and nibble as I was going. And I initially wasn't going to do the powders in the bladder because I wanted to try and keep it clean. But after a few miles, I was like, forget that. So I just started throwing Tailwind in the bladder, and I'm like, I'll figure out how to get it clean when I get home. So I ended up doing that, which was super helpful to have a 3-liter bladder full of Tailwind and Gatorade mixture and being able to just sip, as opposed to trying to pull bottles and uncoordinatedly, you know, pop bottles tops off and try and walk while I'm drinking, stuff like that. So it's, they do take a lot longer to pull out of the pack and fill back up and all that stuff, for sure. But for me anyway, it was nice to be able to sip on the go and not have to, because I know that if I don't have that, I won't drink like I should. And so that was one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, it's one I regretted not doing. I went back and forth on it a bunch. But for that, this hike in particular was unique because we didn't stop. Like, we literally did not stop moving.
I know.
And yeah. normally, you know, we stop every couple hours. And this one was just move, 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 move. So yeah, having that ability to do what you did, where you just got a bladder tube, you could just get a little sip of water without having to, you know, I got a trekking poles in both hands. Kind of switch them over to one hand, grab my Nalgene out, try to hold the trekking poles and untwist the cap. And it was definitely more of a pain in the butt than I would have liked.
Yeah. What was there? Was there a reason behind the whole not stop? Or was it, I guess, was it planned, or did it just happen that way, where you were like, you know what, we're feeling good, we're just going to not stop, we're going to keep going? Or was it like part of the plan to just bushwhack and try and get it done in as fast as we could? Or what was in your head, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, I had this goal of maintaining a speed.
Gotcha.
And I knew, I was hoping that I could realize somewhere between 2.75 and 3 miles per hour total over the trip. So that means you're hiking at, say, 3.2. And every time you stop to fill up water, you lose 10 minutes, you drop down below 3, and then you kind of gain it back up. So that was my goal.
I gotcha.
Versus, okay. That's how I thought I would compete with like Dan and Anthony, who are going to run, but I knew they were going to run and then have to take longer breaks, right? Because running is just going to beat your body up and beat your joints up. So that was my goal, and it, you know, absolutely worked for me. My only regret now is, you know, I was super conservative on day one, just held back, really trying to save energy and reduce stress on the body for day two, and day two never happened. So now I'm like, you know, looking at the freaking calendar, like, I want to get back down there and go crush just one day. So,
right.
Yeah.
But you would say that, well, if we'd have had a day two, that was the right move though, right? Would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I think time was a factor too, of just knowing like you have to move if you're going to get out of there, at a decent time. And going back to day two, like, yes, conserving energy, yes, less tear on the body, but also, hey, the sooner we get back, the more sleep we can get before mm-hmm. getting up and having to repeat this thing. And so that was a factor for me too, of like, I want to, on one hand, not destroy myself on day one, but on the other hand, be as efficient as possible and get out as quickly as possible to be able to hopefully get some rest for day two. So it was like this balance of not going overly hard, but then trying to make up time by not taking breaks. You know, and I was pretty similar to Steve in terms of like that strategy, and glad I did it for sure.
Yeah. How long did you guys, were you pretty close in the time you came out, or were you together when you came out?
Yeah, we were
like 10 minutes okay. or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
So you could have
hiking together. Yeah.
You guys would have had a decent amount of sleep. Had we been able to drop back in, you guys would have been okay on the sleep front, meaning
yeah.
like,
we would have been, it was, probably 9:30 when I got back to camp. So could have ate, been asleep by 10. And then just, if we were on repeat and got up at 3:30, would have been 5.5 hours of sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you ended up staying up at the trailhead till like 1:30, waiting on waiting to make sure no one died. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have got the 9:30 sleep. You'd have had 1:30 in the morning sleep, and you still would have been hosed the next day.
I think we were there
Yeah.
till
2 and then got back, but then even then it was like you guys were in the canyon to get back to camp. I think we left about 2, Steve.
Yeah, it was like 1:40, 1:45. We probably got back to camp at 2.
But then it was like hard because it was like these guys are still out there and you're thinking through all the what ifs in your mind. So
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
it was tough.
Yeah, when I rolled back into camp, or not rolled back into camp, when I got up the next morning and Steve's like, "You owe me a year of your life." And I was like, "For what?" It was funny. It was funny. Yeah.
I was obviously I'm the event coordinator and I feel personally responsible. I mean, everybody's
Sure.
obviously knowingly, willingly putting themselves at risk and doing this, but obviously I feel massive responsibility that everybody gets out safe. And so when there's three guys still out there in the canyon and it's 20 degrees and snowing and 3 in the morning, my mind starts going to all the worst case scenarios, and just like you should, right? Like, okay, how if these guys are in trouble, what can I do? And so that definitely, threw a wrench in some stuff. But everybody's out safe and good, and that's at the end of the day, that's what matters. So.
I don't want to only focus on this, Gabriel, but I have to assume it was a memorable, for good or for bad, like probably somewhat approaching or pushing beyond your limits type situation. But talk to us about that climb. So, again, context. Complete, we start South Rim, you descend, do the long flat, climb up to north, turn around, descend the north, you do the long flat, you're coming through Phantom Ranch. And I think by that time it's probably getting dark or was dark, but you basically know to get out of the canyon. It's getting late, it's getting cold. I'm exhausted. I've hiked 40 plus miles and I still have to climb a very steep, long, dark, windy, cold, snowy handful of hours ahead of me. I'm assuming that's where you kind of like were probably in some new territory, whether it was mentally, physically, etc.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I honestly tried to think about the climb out. I think I was at the beginning, I was like, "Oh man, I would much rather go uphill than down, just because my knee, the knees are not nearly as affected going uphill." And then when I started going uphill, I was like, "Yeah, I was wrong. It was not good." It's funny because right around the 9 o'clock hour, we're all kind of walking, talking. Feeling pretty good, eating all that stuff, and right around 9 o'clock, the three of us just got quiet, man. It was like go mode. You could tell everyone was inside their own heads, and we were kind of trying to work out how how long it was gonna take, what we're gonna have to do in the way of like breaks and stuff like that. But it was funny how quiet we got right at 9 o'clock. It was like no talking. Yeah, just starting that climb. I knew it was gonna be long. I don't want to say it was longer than I thought it was gonna be, but it was way more strenuous than I thought it was gonna be. Like just digging with the trekking poles, those logs, how the logs had been somewhat spaced in a way that a few portions of like you're almost leap from log, so you don't have to step in those big ruts. So it was like, big expenditure of energy, just trying to where to put your feet. And if I'm honest, for a lot of it, thankfully Christian was hiking lead, and so I just watched the back of his shoes for hours. I just kept my head down in hours, and I really tried not to think about how much farther we had to go. It's funny because on the North Rim, we're coming up as a bunch of guys are coming down. And one of the notes that I put in there was don't ask people how much farther because they don't freaking know. So we guys are coming down and we're like, how much longer? And Jack's like, oh, you got about 2 miles. And I'm like, dude, somebody said miles like a mile and a half ago. What the hell? And then Steve comes down and Steve's like, oh, you guys are only about 5 minutes. And I'm like, an hour and a half later, we hit the top. And I'm just like, so one of my notes was like, just don't, because we asked 4 people and nobody knows. It was like, and they might even know, but you hike at different paces, right? So 45 minutes is accurate for steep, but the pace that we were running, I was like, you know, it was not going to be 45 minutes. So one of the ways was just to ask. So when we hit the south rim or south climb, I was really trying not to think about, all right, like 5 more miles, 4 miles, stuff like that. But it was tough. There were some parts where there was some darkness that had set in, and I'm like, that whole like, can you actually, are you gonna be able to get, I mean, there's not, I don't have a choice, but are you gonna be able to get out of here without having to hole up under a rock and sleep for a little while? And honestly, there were times where we took breaks, and I remember sitting down to take a break and falling asleep for like 30 seconds at a time, and having a vivid dream, like, and then back up and waking up. And the guys are, you know, are kind of staring at me because I was talking to them in my 3rd-second dream. Like, I was like, dude, I just introduced you to my kid, right? In my dream. And they're like, we need to keep moving, bro. So yeah, it was, I don't know that I've ever been that sapped before, where you would sit down and immediately fall asleep and then have to pop back up and keep going. Yeah, it was, but it was rough. And I don't know if that answers your question. If you wanted, you know, if you had something more you wanted, but there were a couple of times, and I think all of us had looked at these, like the wind was just violent. It was at you guys, it was like, it was almost, it was angry, trying to get us to quit. And then, which was kind of beautiful, actually. Like, I remember looking up at the snow just blasting me in the face. And you know, when you see the snow and like your headlamp, and it's just, it's a gorgeous, even when you're that tired, I was like, thank you, God, for this moment. But man, it was just violent weather. And so there were times where, as we're waking up, there's like layers of rock that have kind of dug themselves out into like a shelf. And I was like, dude, we could literally crawl right in there and hole up and go to sleep for like 20 minutes, be like stuck inside the mountain and sleep on a rock. And man, it was just those like those dark thoughts that were like, oh, come on, you're sorry, you can give up for a little while. You've come, you know, whatever it is, 41 miles. You can just take a little breather. You know, all that, like all that stuff where it's almost like the devil pecking at you, like, hey, you can't do this, you can't do this. But the ability to have those guys with you, or like even just like praying was super big. Music is super big. That's super helpful too. Stuff like that to try and take your mind off of what was going on was a big deal. And so trying to get out of those darks, say the darkest spots were for sure the South Rim climb out. Did you guys have any of that? Any of that, like those, I mean, for what you consider to be spots, was that the south climb out for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was at the end of a long day. I was just tired, right? It wasn't like the darkest spot ever, but one thing I noticed in that, and like going back to the dynamics of doing this with people, is like Steve, Jory, and I did a lot of the climb out back up to the South Rim together. And then for a while, Steve, like you pulled away and went ahead. And it was just Jory and I, and he mentioned something to me numerous times because I was behind him of like, hey man, if you want to pass me, go ahead. If you want to pass me, go ahead. And he was moving at, you know, a pace I was like pretty comfortable with, and I could have pushed harder, could have gone faster. But one thing I was, you know, doing, and I think there's an interesting dynamic when you're hiking with someone in a situation like that where you're both tired, you're both doing something difficult. It's, you know, long day, crappy conditions, you're cold, it's windy, it's snowy. It's like the dude in the front is being pushed by the guy behind him. And so I was strategically like not dropping back from Jory, and I was like trying to purposely stay as close to him as possible and like on his butt and on his heels. And I wanted him to hear my footsteps and hear my trekking poles, because I knew that that was pushing him, right? Of like,
Yep.
you know, Mark's
Yeah, for
pushing me up
sure.
the mountain. And at the same time, like flip that around, by me trying to stay on his butt, like he's pulling me up the mountain, right? So I think there's that's those situations where, like you talked about Christian being in front, you looking at his shoes, like, yes, that's allowing you to maybe like space out and just follow, but it was probably also pushing him and encouraging him of like, Gabriel's on my butt. Gabriel's pushing me up the mountain, right? So I think it's an interesting dynamic of whether you realize it or not, you guys are both helping each other and you're there for each other, regardless of like who's in front, who's in back, what's said, et cetera. But just that presence is like, I can't stop because Gabriel's behind me. Or you thinking, I can't stop because I got to stay on Christian, right?
Yeah,
And I just
for
think that's a
sure.
pretty cool, like a pretty cool dynamic.
No, I agree. Yeah, and then having Justin behind me, and I did the same thing. I was like, dude, if you need to go, go. I know that, I mean, it is a trail. I'll get out. I'll be fine. As long as I just stay on the trail. And he was like, nope, I'm good, man. He just wouldn't pass me. It was pretty stinking cool. That level of like, I don't want to say instant camaraderie because it's not instant, but when you go through hard stuff, I will maintain this forever. You go through hard stuff with other men, you learn more about a man doing that or sitting around a campfire than you'll ever learn at like a job around the water cooler or, going to a baseball game with a guy. That hard stuff, you learn a ton about a guy. And so I would say that, yeah, just knowing what kind of men you guys have invited on this trip. It's they are I have said it in my head a whole bunch of times, but I really believe they are just uncommon. It's just a bunch of uncommon dudes. And at the same time, and I know we were talking at the very end about how like these are, in my opinion, uncommon men, probably among uncommon men. But then you look at the trail that we were on and you're like, what kind of man did it take to forge this trail? Like we are such candy asses, like compared to the guy that had to come down here and lay bricks or tried to travel across the country in a wagon with only 3 wheels and a pregnant wife and 4 kids and battling, disease and just all that stuff. And so we're like, man, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. This is one of the things that very few people get to do, the rim to rim to rim and actually complete. And then I'm like, man, you put it in perspective and I'm like, I'm not even close, right? It's kind of funny. We were talking.
I love that. Yeah, that we've talked about it every single post-death hike, but the camaraderie of among everybody is it's unmatched. Yeah, it's really, really a special part of the whole event.
For sure. I don't know that you can, and I found it in hunting too. I don't know that you can gain that in any other way aside from doing hard things together. I'd imagine that's how like, you talk about like guys that are in the military and they're fighting side by side and those guys become your brothers because of the things that you're going through. It's just not the same as like a Facebook friend or, like a work friend or whatever. It's a different level. Yeah. Last, I think like last notes. Tape your feet early. That was one of them. That was a good one. Don't, when they start to get hot, my pinky toe looked like it was trying to have a baby. Force yourself to eat gummy bears even when we don't want to. Those toe sock liners. I really want to try those. And then, yeah, that was it. That was my last note, aside from what we'd already talked about. Yeah, toe sock liners. I might try those next year. But yeah, it was incredible, guys. Incredible. I'm so thankful to have been able to be there, and experience. The pushing my mind, pushing my body, even when everything in me is saying, "Hey, stop." It was awesome. I'm very thankful.
Well, that's a wrap, guys. Don't forget to check out the link in the show description. There's more about the death hike, recaps, behind the scenes video, photos, gear, links, and much more. So check that out at the link in the show description. And as always, if you have anything for us, send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And also make sure that you are subscribed to receive future episodes in your podcast app by hitting subscribe or follow where you can. And we'll talk to you soon.